the debate.
Morocco and Israel have reached a U.S. brokered agreement on normalizing relations. Under the deal, Rabat will establish full diplomatic relations and resume official contacts with Tel Aviv. As part of the agreement, Donald Trump, who is due to leave office on January the 20th, agreed to recognize Morocco's sovereignty over the contested Western Sahara region. Reacting to the new development, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas issued a statement strongly condemning the Tel Aviv-Rabat agreement as a political sin. Also, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement condemned normalization deal, describing it as a betrayal of Jerusalem al-Quds. Morocco is now the fourth Arab country after the UAE, Bahrain, and Sudan to agree to a normalization deal with the Israelis since August. To help us better understand how Palestinians feel about this deal, we're now joined by our correspondent, Ashraf Shannon, who's with us from Gaza. Ashraf?
Yes, but the Palestinians are outraged by this new normalization agreement between the Israeli regime and Morocco. This follows normalization ties between the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, and the Israeli regime. Hamas movement said the normalization, agreement is basically a political sin and only encourages the Israeli regime to violate the rights of Palestinians. Islamic Jihad movement described this agreement as treason and betrayal to Jerusalem al-Quds and the Palestinian cause, while Mujahideen movement said that such agreement will never give the Israeli regime legitimacy or security. And also on Friday night, the Palestinian resistance factions in Gaza said that the normalization of ties between Morocco and the Israeli regime is a backstab and will never hide the, quote, the ugly face of the Israeli regime. Palestinians feel betrayed by the normalization of ties between Arab countries, especially in the Persian Gulf region and the Israeli regime. And now you have United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, and Morocco, and already Egypt and Jordan have had so-called peace deals with the Israeli regime before.
All right, thanks a lot, Ashraf. That was our correspondent, Ashraf Shannon, joining us from Gaza. Also with us on tonight's debate, we have journalist and political analyst Mr. Elijah Magnier joining us from Caracas. Also, we have CEO of the Ramadan Foundation, Mr. Mohammed Shafiq, who's joining us from Manchester. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Magnier in Caracas. Sir, how do you view this deal, taking into account the timing of it, as Donald Trump is on his way out?
I think Donald Trump is trying not to leave to Joe Biden the possibility to collect the work of normalization between Israel and other Muslim countries. And it makes no sense, it is not in the interest of the U.S. to see normalization between Morocco and Israel in particular, because the Moroccan population are really not in favor of the Israelis. I've been to Morocco several times, and I see how people behave with the Israelis, what they think, and what is their real feeling toward the Palestinian cause. This is one of the rare times the king of Morocco accepts to make a step that is completely against the will of the population, and this is why it is indeed a political normalization. Israel is going to gain a few flights between Morocco and Israel, and the publicity for Netanyahu, who is really in need to boost his image because he's in deep trouble domestically by facing a new elections. He has the manifestation daily under his house. He's struggling because Israel is facing the biggest economic crisis ever. And also, it is the normalization with these countries who never pose a threat to Israel is also commented by the Israeli media itself, saying it doesn't make a lot of sense really because these were not the enemy of Israel. So it's a kind of a show. However, this is different from the Emirati normalization, because the Emirati population find themselves quickly integrated with the Israelis. This is not going to happen with Morocco.
Mohamed Shafir, I'd like to get your thoughts on the agreement as well. As part of it, Donald Trump, who's due to leave office, as we mentioned earlier, on January the 20th, agreed to recognize Morocco's sovereignty over the contested Western Sahara region. How will this deal affect Western Sahara? We also know it's not legal nor internationally binding for the U.S. to make this kind of deal concerning an area that's halfway across the world.
Yeah, I think it's a really sad moment that you've got Arab countries that have made relationships with Israel even before a Palestinian state has been recognized and enshrined under international law. And for that to happen, there's got to be an end to the occupation by the Israelis of West Bank, of Gaza, of the Golan Heights, and, you know, illegal settlements that have been built successively over decades, increasing the presence of Israeli citizens in Palestinian territories. And I think it's a really sad moment that the Arab world, instead of continuing to stand in unity with the Palestinian people and their struggle for freedom, is letting their relationship with a right-wing xenophobe in the White House, in this term, Donald Trump, on his way out after a humiliating defeat in the presidential election, and trying to restore relationships between the Israelis and Arab countries. And I think what we have to now do is that civic society, as my colleague from Caracas has said, is that civic society, the ordinary man and woman on the streets in Arab countries and around the world, are standing with Palestine in solidarity against the occupation, against the daily bombardment we see from the Israelis in the West Bank and in Gaza, where I've been three times and seen for myself the carnage that the people live under. So, you know, we may be downbeaten, we may be concerned, and we may be, you know, disillusioned. But I think it requires us to refocus our energy and commitment to the Palestinian cause, because it's a cause worthwhile supporting. The world, as Nelson Mandela said, the world is not truly free until the Palestinians are free.
Elijah Magnier, Palestine's Islamic Jihad movement has condemned the agreement, describing it as a betrayal of Jerusalem al-Quds. In the past, the Islamic Jihad movement warned that recognizing the Israeli regime is a great threat for the region. Do you see it in that light as well?
I think Israel is a threat to the region. Like the Russian ambassador said yesterday, one of the Russian ambassadors, Israel is carrying out unlawful assassination, is aggressive towards its neighbors, has carried out hundreds of attacks against Syria, is preventing the right of return of the owner of the land in Palestine, is attacking Lebanon, has attacked Iraq, is attacking even in Yemen. So Israel is taking the initiative on what is called a prevention attack under this false and unlawful title, attacking other neighbor countries because of domestic issues or because of its own policy. And also it is showing that it is not worth of making peace with any country around the Middle East. And what we see, unfortunately, is the Arab states have given up on the Palestinian cause, at the exception of Iran, that is still holding it and holding tight to it. Of course, there is Kuwait that has not normalized yet, but it doesn't have a power to stand against the Americans and the Israelis, while Iran has. So the Palestinian cause, at the end of the day, it's a universal cause of the right of the people to survive and to have their independence and have back their land, regardless the sectarian, regardless the religion, regardless the geography. And this is unfortunately not happening because there is no more international law. That's finished. We see when the Americans are imposing sanctions to starve population, it is a clear violation of the international law, and they don't care about it. So at the United Nations, there is a saying law for all being equal. Well, they should change that and saying no law for everybody. there's no more law. That's why the normalization with the Israelis on behalf of the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian will, who refuse such a normalization until they get back their territory, is a crime not only against the Palestinians, because it is not right to say the Palestinian cause belongs to the Palestinians, but because to the free world, it belongs to the free world. And that is a crime against the free world.
Mohammad Shafi, four Arab governments have now established ties with the Israelis. In your opinion, does this put the security of the region at risk?
Yeah, I think it does, to the extent that, as you see, the biggest obstacle to peace in the Middle East is resolving the conflict of Palestine. And I think that if that can be resolved, if Israel can stop its illegal settlements, stop its daily oppression of the Palestinian people, stop the siege in Gaza, as we've seen for so many years, then there is a chance for peace and there's a chance for normalization. But what you cannot do is start the process of normalization and claim that you then still support a two-state solution, as some of these Arab countries do. They're entitled to their own foreign policies. They're entitled to have their own relationships. But what they're not entitled to is trying to, show the world that somehow they're supporters of Palestine, and at this step, establishing relationships with the Israeli authorities is somehow supported by the masses of the people. It's not. And I think it's really imperative that we all raise our voices in solidarity with the Palestinian people and be very clear about that. You talked about, my colleague in Caracas talked about just Iran, being the obstacle to Israel and its wider agenda. Actually, I'll add a few countries to that. You look at Malaysia, you look at Pakistan, the Prime Minister Imran Khan has been very clear that he would never recognize Israel until there was a Palestinian state. So there are many players, including the Turks, who have been very forthright. Whilst they have diplomatic relations with the Israeli country, but they have a love-hate relationship, if you like, and President Erdogan is quite outspoken on those issues. But I think you're seeing that leadership now from beyond the Arab states, because Palestine is not dependent on the Arab states. Palestine is dependent on the voice across the world, and that's been articulated by Prime Minister of Pakistan so eloquently in the last few weeks in his comments on never recognizing Israel until there is a free Palestinian state.
Mr. Magni, the resistance movement Hamas has said that the deal will increase Israel's belligerence and its denial of the rights of the Palestinian people. Are these normalization deals, in a way, giving a green light for the Israelis to continue their brutal day-to-day violation of the rights of the Palestinians?
With or without normalization, the Israelis continue their aggressive behavior toward their neighbors and other Middle Eastern states. They consider they pose a danger to Israel expansion and plans. Just let me add something here, that no U.S. president ever managed to stop the Israeli settlements. Only Iran is supporting the Palestinian cause by financial means, media, and transfer of experience. The other state my colleague has mentioned, which I really appreciate, they vocally support Palestinians, but the Palestinians, although the vocal support is very appreciated, but the Palestinians need more than that. They are starving, they are surrounded, and Qatar from time to time give them money only for them not to rebel against the Israelis. So yes, Israel will continue his aggression. Israel, only by a policy of deterrence like Hezbollah has imposed on Lebanon, that Israel will stop being aggressive against countries who rejected the U.S. hegemony and the Israeli ipso facto in the region, and that is Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, and Iran. And these are the countries on the front line against Israel expansion and to stop its belligerent act in the Middle East.
Sure. Mohammad Shafiq, in the wake of these normalization deals, all Palestinian factions have been adamant that they will continue on with their resistance. How do you see the aftermath of this deal? Will we see a more united Palestinian front in the face of these measures?
I think one of the consequences of why this is happening is because of that broken disunity under Mahmoud Abbas and the PLO, who continued to negotiate and work with the Israeli government whilst not receiving anything in return. So we see a massive increase in the number of illegal settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. We see the continued oppression of the Palestinian people. We see what, you know, the situation in Gaza, and how important it is, as I said, you know, raising one's voice, contributing to helping the humanitarian care issues, but also being very clear that our support is dependent on the Palestinians unifying. And I think if there's anything coming out of this, I think it shows the Palestinian leadership, from Fatah, from Islamic Jihad, from all the various political organizations, that they have to unite under the umbrella of the Palestinian struggle to make sure that there is freedom for the Palestinian people. And because this is a just cause that requires leadership and support from around the world. And that's what people like myself, you know, I'm a British Pakistani Muslim, very proud of my heritage, very proud that my Prime Minister of Pakistan, Imran Khan, has taken such a vocal step in speaking up in favor of the Palestinians and never recognizing Israel until the Palestinians have a state. But I'm also equally proud of the fact that I've been somebody who's been to Gaza in the last, you know, I went in 2013-14, I went 3 times. So I've seen what life is like for the Palestinians, and their struggle is my struggle, and I'll continue to raise my voice wherever I can on any platform to support the struggle for the Palestinian cause.
Elijah Magnier, what about the insufficient international response, like the OIC, like the Arab League? The Arab League, as we know, failed to condemn the recent normalization deals. Do you think Arab governments are now turning a blind eye to the suffering of their Palestinian brethren?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the Arabs are turning a blind eye on the suffering of the Palestinians. I think the Arabs are partners of the suffering of the Palestinians. By accepting to normalize with Israel, there is no more Arab League, there is no more any unification among Arab countries for one cause, the essential cause of Palestine. We saw how the Saudis and the Qatari relationship went to the floor. We saw how the Saudis behaved with other countries in the Middle East. And we saw the aggressive between from Saudi Arabia toward Lebanon and Syria for 9 years of war. Qatar also participated in that. These are members of the Arab League. Yes, what my colleague said, I fully agree with. The disunity among the Palestinians is the problem. By a unified front among the Palestinians, then the Arabs will have to move, but they not, because Mahmoud Abbas is always on the camp of the Americans, and recently in a couple of weeks, last couple of weeks, he changed his mind without even informing the Palestinians that he is going back to his old relationship and coordination on the security and all other levels with the Israelis and the Americans. The Arab League doesn't exist anymore. There is no more Arab League since the war in Iraq, since the war in Syria, since the violation of the territory of the Palestinians and the normalization of all the country encouraged by Saudi Arabia. Morocco would never have gone to normalize with the Israelis without the pressure of Mohammed bin Salman. So the Emirati is the same, the Bahraini is the same, the Omani is the same, they all followed. Sudan is exactly the same. So no, there's no more Arab League, and there is no more Palestinian cause for this bunch of countries.
Mohammed Shafiq, do you agree with our other guest? He says that Arab governments are not only complacent now, but are complicit in the suffering of the Palestinians.
Yeah, I mean, you can take Egypt, for example, that has the Rafah crossing. It's continued to close the crossing. Very little humanitarian aid has been let through those crossings. And so it's a contributing factor into the ongoing struggle for a Palestinian freedom. And I think my colleague is absolutely right that the Arab League and the Organization of Islamic Conference have become toothless. We have a maniac in the White House in his final few days trying to force, nudge, threaten other countries to recognize Israel. And America, having so-called independent foreign policy, is now in a position where it's doing the bidding for its ally Israel in the region. And that's a real concern, that if you continue to, as I said, occupy Palestinian lands, you have illegal settlements, you have Gaza under an open-air prison, and the world recognizes the injustice, but the people with the power to change it are refusing to do that. And so I think, yeah, it's absolutely right that you look at, you know, look at the Kashmiri cause from my neck of the woods in Pakistan, and Kashmiri, a struggle very much similar to what is happening to the Palestinians. Very much similar. The OIC refused to acknowledge it. The OIC refused to discuss it. And I think this is the moment for the masses around the world that believe in individual freedom,
sure,
and from our Islamic faith, to stand up against injustice anywhere in the world, and that should be our mission, and that's why we should support the cause of Palestine.
Okay, Elijah Magnier, one last question for you, very briefly, if you may, about these normalization deals. Donald Trump said more countries will be joining in. He mentioned, quote-unquote, some of the big ones. Who are you expecting to see now before Trump leaves office?
I think he probably is thinking about Indonesia. He's probably thinking about Saudi Arabia, that is waiting for more countries to join in, and who very much like to impose on Saudi Arabia, because he has a very strong card to wave in front of Mohammed bin Salman, that is the assassination of Khashoggi. And this is why he's holding him by the neck,
right,
and will force the Saudi recognition of Israel before the end of his term in office in 20 January 2021.
All right, thanks to my guest journalist and political analyst Elijah Magnier joining us from Caracas. Also thanks to CEO of the Ramadan Foundation, Mohammed Sheffield, joining us from the British capital, London. And also special thanks to you for staying with us on this debate. Goodbye until next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
Alladhina
And they are those who, if we give them authority in the land, establish prayer and give zakah and enjoin what is right and forbid what is wrong. And to Allah belongs the outcome of all matters.
Dear brothers and sisters, we were discussing the 41st verse of Surah Al-Hajj. الَّذِينَ إِن مَكَّنَّاهُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ أَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَآتَوُوا الزَّكَاةَ وَأَمَرُوا بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَنَهُوا عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَلِلَّهِ عَقِبَةُ الْأُمُورِ. Those who, if we establish them in the land, perform prayer, pay the alms, enjoin good, and forbid evil, and unto Allah belongs the end of all affairs. We sufficiently discussed the interpretations upon the different parts and terms of the verse. We also talked about the friends of Allah, whom have been promised the help of Allah. In the previous verse, وَلَيَنْصُرَنَّ اللَّهُ مَنْ يَنْصُرُهُ. And this verse was continuing the interpretation upon the friends of Allah. This is a wrong consideration that the promise of victory and Allah's help, as well as the defense from the believers mentioned in this verse and other verses of the Holy Quran, are outside of the laws of life and the course of creation. So it's not such. Allah has given this promise only to those who utilize all their abilities and who are active in this scene, those who do not stay aloof and seclude themselves. That's why, in interpretation of this verse, the Holy Quran says, "And were Allah not to repel by means of other people, the earth would certainly be full of mischief." So Allah does not repel the vice of the oppressors only by the unseen powers and the power of the thunderbolt and earthquakes, save some, of course, exceptional instances. But He repels their vice by the true believers, and only these are those whom Allah does support with His help. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, the promises of Almighty Allah not only should not cause the heedlessness of some individuals concerning the burden of responsibilities, but it must also be the source of further encouragements, further movements and activities in them. And of course, it is in this case that the victory has been guaranteed from the side of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And by the way, these believers do not refer to Allah only before their victory, but they also make firm their relation to Him after the victory and the use of the victory against the enemy as a means for the spread of right, justice, and virtue. The Holy Quran says, "Those who, if we establish them in the land, they perform prayer." So they are always referring to the Almighty Allah. They are always remembering the Almighty Allah. In some Islamic narrations, this verse has been rendered into Hadrat Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif and his companions, or in some other narrations into Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam in general. A tradition from Imam Baqir alayhi salam upon the commentary of the holy phrase, "Those who, if we establish them in the land," said, "This verse, up to the end of it, belongs to the progeny of Muhammad and Mahdi and his companions. Allah will bestow them the east and the west of the earth in their governmental authority, and will make religion manifest. And by Mahdi and his companions, he will annihilate innovation and falsehood, as evil ones had annihilated the truth, so much that there will not be seen any injustice on the earth, for they enjoin the good and forbid the wrong." So you see, what Imam Baqir alayhi salam is referring to as the result of enjoining good and forbidding evil is that injustice will be wiped out from the surface of the earth. Of course, there are also some other traditions on this regard, but as we have repeatedly said, these traditions state some clear examples of the meanings of the verse, and they do not hinder the generality of its concept. So, the vast meaning of the verse envelops all believers, strivers, and all the challengers, and of course, for all the times. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Around the world with reporters.
EU leaders told Turkey in October to stop exploring in the contested Eastern Mediterranean waters or face consequences. Earlier this week, all EU states agreed that in their view, Turkey has made no positive shift away from its policy of exploring in contested waters and upped its threat of sanctions. Ankara urged the EU to act with common sense to solve the dispute, but ahead of Thursday's EU summit, Turkey's president made his stance very clear.
Any sanctions decision that can be taken against Turkey will not concern Turkey much. Since 1963, the EU is officially constantly imposing sanctions on us anyway. The EU has never acted honestly.
Germany, the current holder of the EU's six-month presidency, holds the key to whether sanctions will go ahead. However, Turkey resuming its gas exploration off Cyprus in October has angered Berlin.
In recent months, Germany has made an extraordinary effort to find a way to intensify the dialogue between Turkey and the European Union. Regrettably, tensions between Turkey, Cyprus and Greece have not allowed direct talks to begin, and there have been far too many provocations.
Turkey's row with Greece and Cyprus over the extent of their continental shelves in the East Mediterranean flared up in August when Turkey sent a survey vessel to waters claimed by Greece. The two European nations accuse Ankara of drilling for hydrocarbons off its continental shelf. Turkey pulled the vessel out in September to allow for diplomacy with Greece, but then sent it back to the area, prompting an angry reaction from Greece, France and Germany. However, Ankara seems unfazed.
On the Eastern Mediterranean, we will continue to protect our rights. Moreover, we will continue to protect the rights of Northern Cyprus until the end. It is never possible for us to compromise here. But if Greece really acts honestly as a neighbour, we will continue to be available at the table.
The EU created a sanctions program last year to punish what it calls unauthorized exploration in the Eastern Mediterranean Sea, freezing assets of people and companies accused of planning or participating in activities in Cyprus's exclusive economic zone or on its continental shelf. Only senior officials of Turkey's state-owned Turkish Petroleum Corporation were put on the sanctions list, but that was not enough for Greece. It is a delicate situation for Germany, having to mediate between two NATO members, Ankara and Athens, without seeming to have divided loyalties. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Government leaders meeting in Brussels have adopted proposals aimed at trying to avert chaos at EU-UK borders in the event that Britain abruptly exits the bloc's rules and regulations at the end of this month when the Brexit transition period ends on the 31st of December. this as floundering trade talks between both sides continue.
No one understates the challenges that lie ahead, but it's important for the citizens of Europe that we do everything we possibly can to get agreement here.
France has made it clear it will veto any EU-UK trade agreement that does not safeguard the livelihoods of those involved in the French fishing industry. The big sticking point for Germany is ensuring that British firms do not have unfair advantage over EU firms, for example, via state subsidies. Hardline Brexiteers do not want to see a deal, as they are worried this would align the UK too closely to the EU. Equally, there are many people in the European Union who adjudge London to be extremely arrogant. This cohort does not want to see a deal, as they'd rather look on as Britain faces the full consequences of Brexit. Those consequences might include very restricted travel to the EU from the UK from January the 1st due to the 27 nation bloc's COVID-19 rules with respect to non-members. British citizens living in the EU would likely face all sorts of bureaucracy. Then, of course, there are warnings of dire economic consequences for the UK and possibly Scottish independence. We are told the key to securing a EU-UK future relationship agreement to avoid chaos in January is fairness.
This fine balance of fairness has not been achieved so far. Our negotiators are still working, and we will take a decision on Sunday.
Even in the absence of a trade deal with the UK, EU leaders know they already face many economic challenges.
We still haven't fully resolved the problems of very high public debt, private debt still very high, banking sector problems still very present, price adjustments still ongoing.
The prospects aren't looking good. As EU leaders continued their meeting in the Belgian capital, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson stated there is a, quote, strong possibility a trade deal will not be reached. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The administration of US President Donald Trump is given the go-ahead to sell billions of dollars worth of arms to the UAE. On Wednesday, the Republican-led US Senate approved the deal proposed by the government. The contract, reportedly worth some $23 billion, includes the sales of the U.S.'s most advanced F-35 fighter jets and Reaper drones. Senators voted almost along party lines on two resolutions. All but two Democrats voted to block the deal, while one Republican broke ranks to vote against the sale. Trump had issued a formal threat to veto congressional efforts to block the weapons transfer. Those in favor of the deal described the UAE as an important U.S. partner in West Asia. Detractors, on the other hand, argued the UAE should not be armed with advanced weapons given its involvement in the war on Yemen. They also warned that such a move would ignite an arms race in the region. A couple of months ago, in a controversial move, the UAE normalized its relations with Israel. The country trampled upon years of at least verbal commitment to the Palestinian cause by recognizing Israel. It also distanced itself from the majority of the Arab countries that have no diplomatic relations with Israel over the regime's occupation of Palestinian lands. The UAE's recognition of Israel was said to be a precondition for its purchase of advanced weaponry from the United States. Therefore, F-35 jets and Reaper drones can be considered the payoff for turning their back to Palestinians. The United Arab Emirates, which is ruled by monarchs, has a bleak human rights record. The country is a staunch Saudi ally, the two of which have been leading a devastating war on Yemen since March 2015. The war has killed thousands of innocent Yemenis, including women and children, and has caused what the UN describes as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The UAE also openly supported anti-government militants in Syria, exacerbating the suffering of the Syrian people by fueling the bloodshed in the Arab country. It has also been actively engaged in a brutal suppression of a popular pro-democracy movement in neighboring Bahrain. Abu Dhabi is now eyeing to seize control of southern Yemen, including a strategic island there, using its proxies.
Iran and Afghanistan have launched a railway that connects the Iranian northeastern city of Khaf to Herat in the other country. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani and his Afghan counterpart Ashraf Ghani attended the inauguration ceremony through video conference due to the global corona epidemic. The two sides said the project is a pivotal one that helps boost bilateral economic ties and collaborations.
With the completion of such an important project, the commodities of your businessmen could easily be transferred to Europe. With this railway, you can have access to Iran's southern ports, including Imam Khomeini Port and Bandar Abbas, and later on to Chabahar.
For his part, the Afghan president also said that the important project will give fresh momentum to economic ties between the two countries.
We jointly put iron on earth and soil to tie the destiny of the two nations to outline our future collaborations. I offer congratulations and wish the best for the two nations and governments.
The railway is about 140 kilometers long, and after being connected to Herat, it will be about 225 kilometers.
The Khafrat Railway will enhance economic, cultural, and social exchanges between the two countries. It will see over 6 million tons of goods transported annually. It will also link Afghanistan through Iran to the Caspian Sea, Russia, and Europe. Human Abedi, Tehran.
The news that people in the United Kingdom are already getting the COVID-19 vaccine has given hope to millions of families across the globe. Families with elderly or vulnerable members are wondering when it will be their turn. According to the People's Vaccine Alliance, which includes Amnesty International and Oxfam, it might be a while. The organization says rich countries are hoarding the most promising vaccines, just as they did during the swine flu pandemic in 2009. Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech have so far sold out, despite promises of fair distribution.
We set out at the beginning to deliver this vaccine to the world, and that means fair allocations across all countries that wish to use and have our vaccine. So no, not all of the doses that we produce go to the UK. The UK gets, like every country, a fair proportion.
Rich countries have bought more than half the globe's supply of vaccines. That means 1 in 10 people in at least 67 poor countries will not get it unless urgent action is taken. This contradicts statements made by rich nations at the UN after General Secretary Antonio Guterres called on them to make vaccines available to all.
France proposes a donation mechanism so that a portion of the first doses of vaccines available are used to vaccinate priority groups in developing countries.
To end this pandemic anywhere, we have to end it everywhere. We need a united global effort that ensures that everyone has equitable access to a potential vaccine.
Experts say this is blatantly hypocritical, though. Canada has purchased enough vaccines to immunize its entire population 5 times over. The same goes for the world's highest per capita buyer, the United Kingdom. Meanwhile, countries that are subject to US-led sanctions are being prevented from purchasing the vaccine. Iran is one of them. The US has imposed crippling sanctions on its banking sector and its vital oil and gas industry, and threatened punitive measures against any country or company that does business with Iran.
The pandemic has shown what humanity is capable of at its best and worst. Inspiring acts of compassion and self-sacrifice, breathtaking feats of science and innovation, and heartwarming demonstrations of solidarity. But also disturbing signs of self-interest, blame shifting, and division.
The UN is calling for a global ceasefire, debt relief for struggling nations, and a lifting of sanctions amid the COVID-19 pandemic. But it seems these calls have so far fallen on deaf ears. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan criticized U.S. administration's comments and actions against Turkish arms deal with Russia. In a presser, Erdogan, however, said he would discuss Turkish-U.S. relations with the next president once he takes office, just like it was the case before.
Once he assumes office, we will surely sit down and discuss certain things with Mr. Biden, just like we sat down and talked in the United States or Turkey in the past. We will discuss these again. We do not find the statements and actions they make regarding our arms procurements to be nice. We especially don't find their approach in northern Syria to be right.
Turkey and the U.S. ties have been hit by Turkey's purchase of S-400 missiles from Russia after the U.S. was unable to seal a deal on Patriot missiles. Despite the ongoing tensions and sanction threats, everyone could see the chemistry between Erdogan and Trump. The chemistry that Erdogan-Biden relation is definitely not going to have. Analysts worry about the future of relations between Ankara and Washington.
Turkish President's statement on Turkish-U.S. relations is aimed to build a good relation with Washington, especially now that Joe Biden will take office. However, it is not guaranteed that things will go well due to differences between the two allies. The U.S. still insists on its support to Kurdish militants and tries to impose its strategies on Turkey, which is not acceptable for the government here. Therefore, I think tensions will continue to escalate between the two states.
The tension between the two NATO allies goes back to 2003, when Ankara refused to permit U.S. troops to cross its borders to Iraq. The tensions escalated due to different views on the Syrian crisis and Turkey's purchase of S-400 from Russia. Despite the ongoing tensions, many believe that both Ankara and Washington need each other's support in different arenas. This will force Erdogan and Biden to talk things out. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
A number of ambassadors and military attachés of different countries in Taiwan have signed a memorial book to commemorate the high status of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the top Iranian scientist who was assassinated on November 27th. The diplomats have voiced their hatred and condemnation against this act of terror.
Right after the assassination, Russia strongly condemned the assassination of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh and believes that the main goal of such assassinations to destabilize the region and those who were behind his assassination should be severely punished.
As the ambassador of Iraq, we extend our condolences to the Iranian nation. Iraq has repeatedly seen many of such assassinations carried out by its enemies. Therefore, we fully understand the depth of the tragedy. We condemn Mohsen Fakhrizadeh's assassination and call on the international community to get united against all forms of terrorism.
Fakhrizadeh, who headed the Defense Ministry's Organization of Defensive Innovation and Research, was assassinated after his car was ambushed in the town of Absert, east of the capital Taiwan. He was seriously injured and taken to hospital, but succumbed to his wounds. The scientist had a long history in defense innovations and had made key efforts to promote a once peaceful nuclear energy program.
We believe that if countries remain silent towards such acts of terror and assassination, terrorists will become emboldened to continue their acts of terrorism. Therefore, ambassador and military attaché of different countries have signed a memorial book both to pay tribute to Mohsen Fakhrizadeh and condemn his assassination.
Experts believe the assassination of the Iranian scientist comes as part of Israel's attempts to disrupt the once peaceful nuclear program.
The ambassadors and military attachés of different countries who commemorated Mohsen Fakhrizadeh strongly condemned his assassination, saying the main perpetrators should be brought to justice anytime soon. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
Syria's new foreign minister, Faisal al-Miqdad, is in Iran on his first foreign trip since he was appointed. On Monday, he met his Iranian counterpart, Mohammad Javad Zarif. Miqdad later met Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani, and head of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, where the two sides talked about regional issues, such as the fight against terrorism and U.S.'s destabilizing role in the Middle East.
Iran's measures to fight the terrorists in Syria have always been welcomed by the Syrian government and people. The Iran-Russia-Syria coalition to fight Daesh terrorists in Syria is a case in point, which effectively dismantled Daesh from the Arab country. Iran's time and again emphasized on a political solution to Syria's crisis, while the U.S. continues to fund and arm terrorists in Syria with the aim of toppling the government.
Syria is one of Iran's strategic regional allies. However, despite their high level of political ties, both sides agree that the level of bilateral trade between the two countries is too low. Last year, the trade volume between Iran and Syria was around $80 million. Before the Syrian conflict began in 2011, the figure stood at over $1.5 billion. This means that the conflict has been a hurdle in the way of their bilateral trade. But it's not the only problem. The existing U.S. sanctions on both countries plays a significant role.
The U.S. resorted to many ways to disrupt Iran's fight against terrorism in Syria, including the assassination of Qasem Soleimani. Washington's sanctions on Syria follow the same goal of restricting and help from Iran and Russia to the Arab country. The White House isn't willing to see that its terrorist mercenaries are defeated there.
Reconstruction of Syria has been a hot topic since the expulsion of Daesh terrorists from the Arab country. The United Nations estimates the cost of rebuilding Syria at $250 billion. Currently, Iran is active in a range of economic sectors in Syria, from transport to energy and engineering. Faisal al-Mikdad was named Syria's new foreign minister following the recent death of his predecessor, Walid al-Muallim. The top Syrian diplomat says he will keep up his country's strategic cooperation with Tehran, especially in the fight against foreign-backed terrorists in the region. He says this is a fundamental step toward restoring peace and security in Syria and the Middle East. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
During Donald Trump's 4 years in office, relations between the European Union and the United States deteriorated so badly that the sides almost became bitter adversaries. Washington's illegal economic sanctions against Iran have prevented EU firms from doing business with the Islamic Republic. Apparently, it is an example of why the bloc needs to become more autonomous.
We don't accept this kind of extraterritoriality, but in practical terms, it has effects. Well, if we don't accept, we should be able to resist it.
Aside from the Iran nuclear deal, officially called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, Trump has pushed back against the EU on trade, climate change, and how to handle COVID-19. Those are only a few examples. EU foreign affairs ministers have just adopted a policy document designed to repair the damage when Joe Biden enters the White House next month. The document states we need to work together to preserve the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action as endorsed by United Nations Security Council Resolution 2231, 2015. But despite the EU's seemingly positive ambitions, there are many analysts who agree the nuclear deal will not be saved because ultimately the Biden administration will bow to Israeli regime pressure. Trump's hate speech towards Iran, fueled by the powerful Israel lobby, has been relentless during the past 4 years.
We're going to hit you with a force 1,000 times bigger than you've ever been hit before.
Despite Trump and Israel's best efforts, some expert analysts believe Iran's political leaders can still save the nuclear deal.
It is a sensitive issue. And like in the U.S. Congress, also in the Iranian parliament, there are people who are, if not opposed, at least critical. But the foreign ministry and the government, I think, are very, very determined to carry out this deal.
Biden has said he wants to re-engage with Iran. Tehran has made it clear matters will not be progressed at any price. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering the doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to another program of questions and answers on the Islamic belief, where we are trying our best